It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hello, Leading LDS friends. This is Kurt Frankum. I'm your host, and I am speaking a little more quietly because I'm actually at my in-law's house in Blackfoot, Idaho. And let's just say privacy is limited here. So I wanted to make sure I got this interview out there, because on this episode, I interview the two hosts of the popular LDS podcast called This Week in Mormons, Jeff Openshaw and Al Doan. They're a very funny bunch, and I think you'll enjoy the episode. I do handle it sort of like a how I lead interview. Jeff is currently serving as Elders Quorum President, has been award mission leader, and Al is currently sitting on, not like literally sitting on his high council, but he is a member of his high council and has also been an Elders Quorum President. They've got a unique perspective just in regards to Mormon culture, and that's what they really talk about on their podcast. I encourage you to subscribe to their podcast. I listen to it weekly, and it's just a light way to laugh about the things going on in the world, and especially those related to Mormons, and they handle some serious issues as well, but it's entertaining nonetheless. So here's my interview with Jeff Openshaw and Al Doan from This Week in Mormons. Today we have the two hosts of This Week in Mormons, Al Doan and Jeff Openshaw. How are you two?
I am great. Tremendous, Kurt. Thank you for having us.
Kurt. Yeah.
It's always fun to be on the other end of the table.
Yeah, you know, we did this, what was it, like a year or two ago? This is before I had an official podcast. I just sort of recorded a Google Hangout, and we chatted a bit about what you guys are doing at, as you call it, the Twim Nation, This Week in Mormons. And it was a good time. But before, Al, at that time, you were an Elders Quorum President. And Jeff, you had yet to be an Elders Quorum President. But today,
I had topped out at Warden Mission Leader. All right. I had not advanced.
It's true.
I had not been promoted.
Resubmitted your application, and they took you as Elders Quorum President. So you're now serving.
They told me to go back, get a few more credits, and then reapply.
Nice. And here you are. You get to motivate the world of home teaching. So
the joy of joys.
It's a dream calling. And Al, you are currently sitting on the high council of your stake. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. See, we split the stake, and I thought that they would take the chance to redraft. And they did sort of, but I stayed in there. Like, I was very excited to be back in the no man's land. I was like, no, that felt good. I had a lot of ability for it, but now I being a nomad. They're like, the Lord really wants you here. And I was like, what, does he for sure? Like, well, I even did. I was like, would you mind if I went home and prayed about it? They said, sure. And then they called me that Sunday. I was like,
nice.
Yeah, all right. Just, that's called the assumptive close. And the Lord loves to use that. He's just like, oh, so you're already, you bought, congratulations. I'm like, did I already? I bought it? Okay.
Nice. Well, before we get into that, I want to approach this as I have a segment on my podcast called How I Lead, where I just sit down with random primary presidents, bishops, stake presidents, apostles, okay, none of which have returned my call. and we just talk about how they lead.
Their photo and then their book.
Yeah.
We sit down.
Right.
So what do you think, Spencer? What would you do here?
Exactly. And but we just chat about how they lead and how they've approached their callings. Serving as Elders Quorum President is quite different than serving on the High Council, as you have discovered, Al. And so that's what we want to do. But before we do that, I want to make sure we explain to Leading LDS Nation what Twim Nation is. So, Jeff, tell us
I'm the pitch man. Okay. Yeah.
And
well,
then Al will give us our assumptive close.
Yeah.
This Week in Mormon is a robust online community of Mormons and friends of Mormons where we talk about basically just Mormon issues and a fun place. I feel like the words a safe place, if I were to say that, implies like it's a holding ground for everyone with like all their issues or what have you. But it's we started it years ago. Many years ago now. It's like what we're finishing our sixth year now, Al, I think.
It's a long time.
Yeah. So one of the main reasons we started it is there was no good middle ground, we thought, between either church produced podcasts that were fine and dry, and back then there wasn't much else, or there were the podcasts on the other side that were like, you know, quote unquote questioning podcast type situations.
Right.
And we wanted to have a nice middle ground where we can still talk about stuff as needs be, but from a perspective of active members of the church who care about the mission of the gospel and about our role in it, and still be able to laugh at ourselves on the side too. Sometimes I feel like maybe we used to be more comedic than we are now. I'm not sure, but
we always say that. I was funny when I was younger.
We were so carefree then. No kids, no businesses, no things to worry about. We were right.
It was all just jokes.
Yes. Yeah, I remember
that. McKay Coppins still worked at the Mormon Times, so we used to make him, and it was.
Now he's hit it big, whether you like it or not.
Hardcore. So it's been good. We've had a good time. Any of you can. We're on iTunes. We're on Android. Wherever you want to find us, or even on our website, you can stream it there. So.
Yeah, it's a fun podcast, and I remember the first time I heard it, I was very like suspicious, like who are these two? Like
we get that a lot.
You're always everybody's always looking for somebody, you know, like most of the Mormon stuff out there is disenfranchised LDS folk that are like have a son, right? And so it's very rare to just get people that are good believing LDS folk that are also able to sort of laugh at some of the stuff we do and dissect some of the other stuff that's more meaningful and have a good time with it. So we feel like a niche.
And then Jeff, you also have would you call it a sister podcast, the Sunday School Bonanza, which I have opportunity to join.
We're moguls. Yeah, This Week in Mormons is a network, effectively at this point. We're always looking for opportunities to grow. Sunday School Bonanza, though, was actually Al's idea a number of years ago. We wanted to go through the gospel doctrine lessons under the premise that nobody ever reads those student manuals they pass out every year.
That premise is held to be true, by the way. On a survey of 1 million people, 0 people have read them.
Yeah, and absolutely true. So we said, hey, we don't want to replace your personal scripture study, but maybe if we do a quick, 10-15 minute podcast, kind of going through the material, you can listen to that on your way to church or something and then just be a little bit more prepared and have a better gospel doctrine lesson. That was the idea behind it. And it's been pretty good. It's kind of its own different thing. And I've actually enjoyed it quite a bit. It's been kind of fun to watch that one grow.
Yeah, it's a fun podcast. And as you've asked me to, co-host various lessons and give my input and perspective, I'm always like that extra sharp guy in class on Sunday. I'm like, I've reviewed this to the max.
When I was studying for this.
Right. I always mention that before each comment. So.
Well, cool. Yeah, so it's been good. Yeah, so Sunday School Bonanza, we'll see what happens this coming year because we're finally rotating back around to the Book of Mormon lessons, which we already did 4 years ago. So I'm not quite sure how we're going to treat that.
Cool. Right on. Now, before we get into the kind of your experience as serving in these specific leadership callings, maybe just in 30 seconds, each of you give us your background, where you're from. Were you raised in the church? Did you serve a mission? Al, let's start with you.
Yeah, I'm from Missouri. My ward is actually far west Missouri state. So right in my far west, I'm in Hans Mill, all that stuff. So I was raised around a lot of church history, was raised LDS and served a mission in Ukraine. I'm a single guy at the age of 33. So naturally, I have a testimony with a few battle wounds on it, but I'm here and still firm in the faith, as one would say. I really enjoy the church. I think we have a wonderful church that it presents. And that's sort of my background.
Nice, cool. Jeff, how about you? What's your background?
I'm a native of Orange County, California, born and raised there, went on a mission. Oh, sorry, raised in the church, born in the church. My parents divorced when I was young, so I think that informed my gospel view a bit differently in some ways. But I'm very lucky that my parents are civil and my dad's always been around and stuff. So let's see, went on a mission to Spain in Barcelona, which was most excellent. Went to undergrad at BYU, studied poli-sci. Went to grad school in Scotland, studied nationalism, which is the most useless degree you can ever get, but who cares? I work for a government contractor. I do international conflict stuff. Oof. And no, it's good. I like it. And so Al might have gone on his mission to Ukraine. And that's actually where Al and I met on a study abroad in Ukraine. That's how we became friends. And now currently I work on Ukraine, usually on the war and stuff over there. So it's kind of my, I'm very big on Ukraine. I love Ukraina. It's good times. And that's basically me.
Cool. Now, and Jeff, you're currently serving as the Elders Quorum president of your ward, right?
Yeah, I've been trying for about 18 months to get out of it, but it's not.
He says Elders Quorum King.
Nice. And generally, I like to ask people how the story went down of when you were called. Is it something you expected? Were you blindsided by the calling? Maybe briefly tell us that story.
You know what I mean? Okay. I guess I was a little bit blindsided. I was in primary for the whole time, ever since I've been married. My wife and I have been up in primary together, which was a lot of fun. And then I got a call from a state secretary or somebody and said, state president wanted to meet with me. I was like, okay, I don't know what that's about. And it wasn't until he called back and said, by the way, the state president would like your wife to come with you. Because when they say they want your wife to come with you, that tends to narrow the field of what it could be about, at least in my view, right? I'm like, okay, well, if they're involved in the honey, where are we going with this? Like, I know I'm not going to be the bishop or anything. That'd be stupid. So I didn't really know the doings of the quorum very much because I never got to go to Elders Quorum. I was always with the primary. And so I didn't know that our president was outgoing at that point. He was getting married. No idea. So then state president met with us, extended the call. And I said, okay, cool. I'd kind of zeroed in on that maybe that was going to be the possibility before it came true. And so they called me as that. And it's been interesting since. Lots of lessons learned.
Nice.
It's always funny because there's a part of you that always feels like, oh man, like I could do it a little better. I mean, as we'd like to be never aspiring to leadership, there's a part of you that sort of does, especially being raised in the church. I think you're always curious if you've seen it done 1,000 times, maybe you could. And then it's the second you're in there, you're like, oh my gosh, you know what? Like, I have a ton more respect for the guys that have gone through this.
Yeah, totally.
And I would really like to take back any of those mean things I said, the lessons that I was disruptive in, the snarky comments. I'd like all that back, please. Goodbye, me.
Right. And that's really a great part of leadership is you gain that perspective and it's humbling, but also you gain more support for those that are in those callings. So for sure. Now, Al, what about you? You were an Elders Quorum president of a YSA ward. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, I was, and then I turned 31 and left the YSA ward. It was sort of, I mean, you sort of find yourself drifting around a little bit. I would, I enjoyed my 3 hours at church, but I also enjoyed going to whatever ward when I woke up. Because as you transition back out of the YSA wards into a family ward or whatever, no one really knows what to do with you at that point because they're sort of wondering why you're there and what it's not like there's a contingent of us in each ward, unfortunately. And so I found myself sort of drifting a little bit, had a great general conference last year, the year before, and really felt like I needed to sort of hit the reset button, get out of Utah and go give it the old college try again. So I was on my way to DC. And I was home for Christmas for about 3 weeks and my stake president called me in to chat with me and called me to the stake high council. And I explained to him I was not living in his ward, nor was I or in the stake. And I was on my way to DC and he suggested that we try this out, that we try a something a little different, that he felt strongly about the call and that I was supposed to be there. And honestly, it was sort of an answer to my prayers of like, you know, trying to find a place in the church and trying to find meaning, because now I got to be a nomad that wanders from ward to ward full time and ended up working out all right. And again, I mean, I have a ton of respect for stake president sort of has the vision to find a guy like me and place that calling there, because it's helped me significantly and sort of given me that new look on my situation as well as in my position. So cool. it was a great surprise for me.
Yeah, that's a great story. And when I heard that you were put on the High Council, I was really excited about that because many, you know, there's this dilemma that I think general leaders of the church are dealing with as far as, you know, how to help the singles feel welcome in a ward. And I think every local leader has asked themselves that question before. And many times as these callings come up, whether it's High Council or counselor in a bishopric or whatever it is, I think many leaders kind of just look over those that aren't yet married and things, but they still have such a capacity to serve. So I think it's a great way for that stake president to find place for maybe, you know, not only you, but others in the church, is to put them in leadership callings where they can really give back. I mean, is that, what was your feeling as far as all that goes with finding a place in the church?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that's great about it is I'm a bearded, long-haired, single, you know, farmer, right? Like I know I'm sort of the antithesis of what you'd expect a normal high counselor to be. Uh-huh. Also, I'm not 75 years old and been a bishop 9 times, and so I'm sort of here, and I found myself identifying with a lot of the outcast crowd, if you will, or the ones that are struggling to feel identified with in the church. It's kind of fun to go around and be able to shake their hand and talk, you know, they get to see that it's not, you know, it's great to be a part of a church that's not fitting in the pigeonholes that I think we'd like or that we'd expect them to fit in. And the same goes with, you know, some of the callings all the way up in the church. We're getting more and more diverse as time goes on, and I think that does a lot to speak to people who are maybe struggling to find their own place in the church or identified with in the church or something like that. And so it's kind of nice being not the norm, and makes me question if the Lord sort of had this whole not married thing planned out for a little while. You know, when it all works out, you sort of look up and you say, oh well, God, you knew the whole time, you old dog. I should have tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. And end up trying to fix it ourselves and do all the, you know, whatever we normally do. And so it's great to be used in a way that I think, is giving a lot of marginalized people a little bit of leverage and feelings of understanding in the church.
Cool. Now, are you the only single person on your high council at the moment, or?
I'm the only single person I've ever heard of being on high council.
They have some out here in D.C. Some who are in the mid-singles ward.
Nice.
There's a few.
Nice. Yeah. I think it's great. I've literally, though, like, it was as far away from my realm of reality as I could get, I thought. So it's pretty random.
Yeah.
I remember, Al, you were blown away. I remember I was home for Christmas, and then you sent me a text, or you called me or something, and you were like, dude, like, call me back. And usually if it's that...
It's like 911.
Yeah, you said like 911, call me. And I was like, what is going on? Like, did something crazy bad happen? Like, what's happening? And then you told me that. And I was, you know, I mean, it was a bummer because you were going to move to DC and we were going to be friends again. But, you know, it worked out.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
But that would be mind blowing. I mean, I felt like it was somewhat overwhelming when I was called as Elders Quorum president. But I would feel even, it's been your situation now, I think, as you imagine being, you know, a single guy and kind of a nomad, like you said. Like, I'm sure you never saw that coming at all.
The interesting piece of it is you know, you sort of like I had never considered what a high councilman did, and so I'm like, great, well, giving talks, that's nice, and then it ends up being a 30-hour a week gig, and I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I need out of here. Lord, let me go. And he doesn't care.
That's right. Those callings will take as much time as you give it, for sure. So, well. Yeah. Jeff, let's bounce back over to you. With your time as Elders Quorum president,
with me.
Looking back now, you said it's been about 18 months. If you could get in your DeLorean time machine and go back to day one as Elders Quorum president, any any principles or thoughts that have kind of been a theme throughout your service that you've learned and gained that you would have really emphasized to yourself on day one?
I would say from a leadership perspective, I've learned that I can give my counselors more to do. And I feel like I'm a decent delegator. Like, I don't try to do it all myself. But as I've talked, I have one counselor who moved away, for example. So I kind of had an exit interview with him. And he was, I always felt very, very on the ball with things. But he told me, like, no, I probably could have been used even more. And I've realized that. But I think it's very easy, especially when you're in a leadership position, when you're, you know, kind of in the driver's seat with a quorum or a group or whatever, as a president. Don't be afraid to really just, like, dump a lot onto the counselors. And so that's something I'm still learning and trying to improve. I think that's been one of my bigger takeaways. And my other one has been sort of related to that. I had this lofty idea that I actually got from your podcast once, Kurt, talking about home teaching. And I was trying, not home teaching, but PPIs, which are tough to get through. And I heard a show that you did once where the suggestion was dump all the rest of your quorum work on your counselors, and then just you as the president, just do PPIs,
right,
and just crank them out. I've totally failed at actually doing that, even though it's something I've wanted to achieve and make it just that same way for a long time. It hasn't panned out the same way. And I guess I've realized every situation is different, which is fine. So, you know, don't be afraid to use your counselor. Make your counselors do PPIs if that's what works in your situation. I understand the ideal,
right,
where it could be if I were able to be the one doing that and handling the spiritual stewardship as the individual with the keys of the work of our quorum. I feel there is a certain power there. But, you know, use the resources that you have and don't be afraid to use the resources that you have.
Yeah. Would you say, is there anything else that you absolutely consciously do not delegate to your counselors because you feel it's important that you do as the president, or?
I feel like we have pretty good just back and forth and discussion. At the end, home teaching assignments are pretty much just on me. I might loop some of the guys in and see how they're feeling about this or that. We have, you know, in presidency meetings, we have discussions, but I haven't ever done it where I sit down with my presidency and we pray about assignments or anything like that. I've always just done that myself. And I've included the bishop at times too, because officially per the handbook, the bishop is supposed to be like involved in the assigning of home teaching. Guess how many times the bishop and I have ever sat down and talked about home teaching assignments? Never. It's just kind of,
yeah,
been my thing. And that's okay.
You give him a glance and he says, that looks good. So, how would you describe the culture, the demographic, the personality of your quorum in the DC area?
One thing I really enjoy about my quorum is just the pluralism that is there. And I know there's pluralism throughout the church and wherever you may be, whether you're in, you know, Draper, Utah, I'm sure there's stuff there. Not everything's as cookie cutter as sometimes we think it is. But I really love that, because the DC area does attract a lot of different types of people to it, and a lot of very well-educated people as well. I would say by and large, my quorum is extremely well-educated. I'm not going to say it's worldly for fear of drifting into the traditional Mormon interpretation of that word, but I will say I have a quorum of guys who are like professionally ambitious, not afraid to not wear white shirts to church, and not afraid to have facial hair. And it's not like a thing where anybody cares, if that sort of paints a picture for the overall tenor of the group and the ward itself. That's the best way I can describe it. And I definitely have people from all sides of the political spectrum, and that informs their spiritual view. And that's very interesting for our quorum in particular, because I don't go into my quorum assuming every single person, you know, falls into this one particular area. I really have a very broad sample.
Yeah.
And that informs me and does guide me in the things I try to do for the quorum, because I can't lean on some of the old tropes within Mormonism, for example, because it won't resonate necessarily in the same way.
Right. Right. Well, that's cool. And I think that's, in some aspects, I think that makes leading a little bit easier, because you're not caught off guard as much, where I think if you're in an area like...
Oh, I've been caught off guard.
but I guess you're almost expecting it to some extent, where if I'm sure if some comments in your elders' quorum, if they were said in a, you know, central Utah ward, they would like run the man out of church, right?
That's absolutely true. I've been in quorum meetings, and one of those other great things I've learned is that part of my stewardship is to ensure the correct doctrine is taught. That's like part of my calling. And thankfully, I've never had to really jump in there and kind of like lay the smack down or anything. But there's been times when I kind of let it play with the way comments are going, because I think other guys with different points of view are going to come in and balance it back out, and typically they do. Yeah. But there have definitely been moments when I've kind of sat there like, oh boy, OpenShaw, you're going to have to kind of put down the kibosh on this one finally. I don't know.
Right, right. And Al, how about you going back to your time as Elders Quorum president? Anything you gathered from that experience that on day one you wish you would have known?
I actually think I probably gained more perspective as a high councilman trying to help Elders Quorum presidents. Oh, right. Nice. A lot of the focus that we end up putting on, you know, like on a stake level, as we look at the health of the stake, some of the things that we measure are like number of Elders Quorum aged people that are, or prospective elders, they're called, right? So the people that are of age but have not received the Melchizedek priesthood, yeah, for whatever reason, and you know, and sort of if that number is moving in a healthy direction, then meaning like if we're going and finding those people and bring them back to church, then normally you have like everything else sort of works out. Success breeds success in a lot of areas, and so as we can go and find those people. And if you think about it, I mean, those are people that join the church and then end up either something happened in their teenage years and they end up not making church a priority. You have to think, like, probably a good half of them would, if pressed, would say, no, I still believe the church is true. And so those are the people that if we can go and find and bring back, it's great. The other side of that is if you do all that work to go and bring them back and you still have crappy lessons or really bad Sundays where, you know, they sit there and wish the whole time that you weren't judging them for playing Tetris on their phone because they hate it. You know, that like you've done all that work and not given them the experience where they can feel the Spirit at church, which I think should be the major focus. And if I could go back, I would put one of my counselors over home teaching, because that's sort of an administrative task more than anything. Just say, you guys, I mean, run that, get the reporting, all that stuff that we have to do. But that's not, I mean, honestly, man, like in all my time, I've never once been blessed by home teaching, never once. And so like, I hate being home taught and I kind of hate home teaching. But we do it not for people like me. We do it for people that sort of need a friend. Ideally, if the church were perfect, then everybody that was in the church would have a friend that sort of knew how they were doing, and home teaching would be completely irrelevant. And those friends would have their best interests at heart and understand the hierarchy and be able to report up. But like if I could do it again, I'd put one there. I'd put one whose focus was on creating that Sunday environment and, you know, preparing the teachers and preparing sort of supplements, musical numbers, things like that, making sure that we had these opportunities created, this atmosphere created where the Spirit could be felt. And then we would all go and just look for the prospective elders and work with these priests that are coming up the chain and that kind of stuff. I think that actually would pay a lot more dividends than anything else that I ever did as an Elders Quorum president. Because I look back at my time and I'm like, man, I was really unremarkable. Everything I did, you know, the quorum didn't die. We had some good experiences in there, but it's not like it grew by leaps and bounds. Really, I just sort of kept the status quo, and I really wish that I would have made a full play at trying to make a more meaningful impact.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and I think
go ahead, Kurt. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to comment that the difference you mentioned, like you, from your opinion, you weren't a remarkable Elders Quorum president, but I think the difference between going from unremarkable to a really remarkable is, like you mentioned, these little things, you know, the environment on Sundays, where you're putting your focus in, you know, administrative versus ministering tasks, that it's not a big difference there that can really launch an Elders Quorum president to that remarkable status that members of this quorum will always remember. So, Jeff, what do you think? What were you going to say?
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, yeah, I think it is really important to offload stuff. Like, you know, I don't want to give up the impression that I'm, like, I certainly don't believe in the president kind of tackling too much. Like, I might do home teaching assignments, but my secretary handles reporting. Like, I don't bother with that because it's not something that is important. Or teaching, like, yeah, have a counselor do it. My first counselor handles all the quorum assignments for teaching. Half the time I show up on a Sunday, I don't even know who's teaching that Sunday.
Jeff, we're not judging you. We're not saying that you're a crappy Elders Quorum president.
I am a crappy Elders Quorum president. But one area where I think Al and I do have a disagreement is on home teaching. Though though I do agree with you on that one point, Al, that if we were great members of the church and just taking care of fellowshipping people and doing that on our own, home teaching would be a moot point. But like so many examples we have in the scriptures of the saints failing to do something, we then receive a commandment, whether it's a law or a program or what have you.
Oh, I know. I do it because I have to.
To try to steer the ship. But I do think that there are very positive experiences too.
I don't have a testimony of it.
And that's okay. You might not. I do. I've had really, really good experiences either being a home teacher. I admit that being home taught, I don't always care about as much. But of course, as the quorum president, I definitely am not the one to put up barriers to my home teachers coming over. That would be just the most hypocritical thing I could do. So I'm fine with that. But I've had really good experiences home teaching. I think the hard thing is a lot of people feel that it's like forced friendship.
Right.
And I completely understand that. You play to your strengths. I think if you're making assignments and you're praying about it, sometimes it makes sense, like pair people up who are either already friends or assign people who are where it's a likelihood that they could be friends. On the flip side of that, the Spirit tells us things sometimes, and sometimes we
wish. I wish our month-to-month focus didn't have to be go say hi to people and see how they're doing. There's some important things we could be doing.
Yeah, and it depends on how you look at it. In my stake, the stake president has sort of a standard for what we, at least for reporting, how we count a visit. It's supposed to be a visit like in someone's home where a message is shared. And the idea behind that being that we're not just going and being a friend and being a pal and taking care of temporal needs, but we're actually like leaving the Spirit there and imparting that with them so that there's a better Spirit than when we arrive. I completely understand the rationale behind that. It's a pain in the butt to count it that way, though.
I just think that's dumb, though, right? If the idea that I need you, Jeff, to come over and sit down and read the scriptures with me is a little bit, frankly, disingenuous. Like I don't want you to come over and read the scriptures. My spirituality is a very personal thing, and I'm happy to like sync up with you and you know, you want to share, this is great. I would rather that you called me and said, hey man, let's go get breakfast. I just want to make sure that like everything's going well and there's nothing, you know, do you need help with anything? That's more what I would want out of a home teacher than you coming over with the exact message that I just had to go and share to three other people and then regurgitating it to me and me having to pretend like I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, ideally you pray about your, ideally you're prayerful about it. And if there are different messages to share, you do that, but I completely understand where you're coming from, Al. And from my end, on the reporting end, it makes it difficult because, yeah, I sit there with my instinct and I'm like, wait a minute. So you saw so-and-so, you took some less active person some cookies and chatted with them for a bit, but you didn't share a message.
1,000 times better. Oh, my God.
Yeah, am I going to be so by the book that I say that doesn't count as a visit? In my opinion, it does, because you're looking out for the welfare of somebody. Sorry, Kurt, we're kind of railroading this here. Sorry.
No, this is a good discussion. And, you know, it's a very important discussion because, as Al said, which I agree with, and I'm in the same camp where I really don't enjoy or gain anything from some random person in my ward coming into my safe place in my house and like sharing a superficial lesson with me, right? But and now that I have children, I see an important of like, I think it's important to have like this separate person, this separate testimony come into my home and teach that. And I've written about this, about how do you home teach an introvert, right? Because I'm not saying that Al's an introvert. I'm definitely more of an introvert, but sometimes it's in the approach of saying, what does that home teaching visit mean, right? And mm-hmm. when is it really complete? And approaching it with a sincere, like trying to understand what adds to their spiritual experience in the church culture, and then approaching it for that, like Al, like going to breakfast or having someone take you to breakfast and just chatting and doing that might be more helpful than, you know, setting a formal appointment. But either way, I think you both have valid points that it's an important discussion to have.
Yeah, the important thing is sort of know your
people. Flock.
Know your people.
That's exactly true. Because if so much home teaching is by the numbers, and you don't, the whole point of it is to establish a relationship with somebody and know their needs. I mean, growing up, my mom still has the same home teacher she's probably had for, I don't know, 25 years or something, at least at this point. And this great, kind, wonderful man, he was a widower for most of this stretch. He never came over and shared a message with us, but he'd call us up and be like, hey, you guys need like a sandwich or something. And when I had a mom working full time who was just running around all the time and never had a moment to do anything, having somebody come by and just bring us dinner and just hang out and just say hi to us meant the world to us. And I look back on that and say, that was great. he took care of our family. That's what we needed more than anything. And I helped our family be more stable and helped our family have more peace in the home.
Yeah.
And inevitably led to other good things. But the key is to know the people you're home teaching and know what they need. And you can't get there unless you actually take the initiative to get in there and find out.
Yeah, I think that story of your home teacher is a great example of, you know, a home teacher should never say, is there anything we can do for you? Like, know them well enough that you can say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take them a meal or a sandwich because I know they need that. So
I'm going to try that from now on. When I do a visit afterwards at the end, I'm going to say, all right, so this is what I'm going to do for you this month.
Yep.
Here it is.
Yep. Very effective. All right,
that's the used car salesman approach. I like it. Nice.
What's it going to take to get you?
What's it going to take to put you in that pew on Sunday? You name it. All right.
Nice. Well, let's shift gears a little bit more, Al. I want to go back to your role as high councilman, and I know we're running a little tight on time here, but you know, my brother served on the high council, and he sort of said that you really feel like an island where you're not, you know, you're on this council of 12 brethren, but you don't have like a presidency per se, that you're kind of going to a war room together and hashing out like a plan. You're sort of just floating, and it's the easiest calling to really do nothing. I mean, is what people have told me, because the accountability isn't there as strongly. And
that is definitely not the case.
Have you not heard of the Sunday School presidency?
Tell me, like, experience been like just serving in general in that calling with, you know, with accountability and what are your responsibilities? How do you get work done?
Well, when you serve next to the caliber of brethren that I do, I mean, they sort of motivate you, right? When you look around and they're like, no, I went on, you know, 3 visits this week. We found 9 people and half of them came to church. And, you know, the Elders Quorum president felt more alive than he'd ever felt. And we got these guys here and worked with the bishop and was at all 50 meetings for everything. And you're like, oh my gosh. All right. Cause I just made a lunch and shared it with a guy. That's all I did. So like it sort of motivates you to step up your game a little bit. But like I'm not kidding. I have probably 15 hour work days on Sunday that I'm working with the different wards and with, you know, PPIs and callings. And then I'm commuting to our meetings that we have as eye council. Like it's the most grueling, calling I've ever had. And there's always more that you should be doing, right? It's
sure.
the thing that you know, when you were in college and you had that guilt anytime you'd sit down to watch a movie that you should be writing a paper, like it's that same guilt now where like if I sit down and watch a movie, it's like, oh, there's still like 100 things I should be doing. Well, I guess I can watch a little movie. And so there, it's a little bit difficult there, but there's a ton. I mean, there's like the great high councilman. When you see guys that really are supporting a warden and elders quorum president and a high priest group leader and working with them to continually improve and finding their people in their ward and helping coordinate some of that high council so that everything runs smoothly and being an aide to the bishop. I mean, it's quite a remarkable opportunity that we have to go and be of service to these different wards. And so if, I mean, I would think that your brother is just a pretty crappy person for being so lazy.
I'll pass that on. No, he wasn't a good one, but he definitely felt like this lack of, and maybe it just was the nature of the leaders he served around where.
Don't try and defend him, Kurt. Don't try and defend him.
Or he felt like if he showed up and did nothing, like nobody would really like call him out. But I guess, you know, like you said, having meetings where you sit together with the high council and maybe go around and say, you know, what'd you do this week? What successes did you have? And could benefit there. So
return and report. That's what the right. Gospel's built on, folks.
That's right. Well, cool. Man, we've covered home teaching. That's one area we generally delve into, but I think we've got a good approach there. Jeff, would you say, do you have any unique approaches to home teaching or the way you assign tasks or assign the companionships? You sort of mentioned that, but anything else?
I mean, the one easiest thing to trap to fall into with companionships is to let everything be just too kind of like a puzzle. And it is a puzzle every time you have to update companionships, which reminds me, it's the last day of the month. I need to update assignments. And that's one thing. I update assignments every month. Don't drag your feet on that kind of thing. I've been in quorums before when I've been in a quorum for like 9 months and I don't even get an assignment.
Yeah.
And then nothing changes. It's hard, but like stay on top of what your ward's doing. My ward has a lot of turnover. Our ward is probably 60% young married couple, just because a lot of people move here. People with either no, zero kids or maybe one kid. And then they all depart for the suburbs eventually. And that's another problem, our ward faces. Sorry, a challenge, opportunity, whatever euphemism you want to use. But it's stay on top of your assignment. That's one thing I strive to be really good at. I don't know if I pride myself on it, but I make a point to send out new assignments every month. If it's only like one thing changed, then I'll just email that one companionship, right? I mean,
yeah.
And I also canvas really hard. I pass out assignments physically on Sunday. I email the assignments to everybody. I try to check off every possible scenario to make sure people know what their assignment is, because nothing irks me more than when somebody comes back and just says, oh, I didn't know we were assigned that person. And I'm like, dude, I handed you a thing that has their name on it. Like, we had this.
No, Jeff. No.
It's one of those things I've tried to figure out ways to get around, because inevitably no one's going to be as on the ball as you might want.
You're managing volunteers, right?
Exactly. So it's hard. You're managing volunteers.
All these people are here for free.
And you hope that enough.
You can't be mad at them if they don't do it because it's all free.
Well, yes and no. I can be mad because, like, hey, part of your duty is a priesthood holder. So, boom.
Maybe if you inspired and led with love, Jeff, charity as a motivator would be better than duty as a motivator, or fear. You lead by fear. That's
well,
why.
Well, see, as Michael Scott said, I want people to be afraid of how much they love. That's what I'm working for.
I want people to be afraid.
But I will say that is I try to create an environment.
That's also.
Yeah, but I try to create an environment of like openness. I think that's very valuble in any auxiliary you might be in. If people feel like it's a fine place for them to be, the worst thing you can do is make someone feel like they don't belong because of a comment or a policy or what have you.
Or a beard or a long hair or a...
Or whatever. And that said, there is a fine line there. You don't want to... You've got to make sure you stay on ball and, you know, keep doctrine correct and make sure things are going as they should, but create an environment where anyone who's visiting would not feel out of place. And I think that's a vital thing to do. And I think we've seen a lot of success in my quorum over the past few years or whatever with that. That's been pretty good. And I've enjoyed seeing that and seeing that greater sense of understanding, some camaraderie. Our lessons are more effective. That's like Al said, why are we coming there? Are we coming to be spiritually fed? Yes. So work from that point and go backwards and make sure your lessons are good. So I'm trying to hit on all those things and just try to have a more just positive, proactive, engaging quorum. Still a lot of work to do.
Yes. Okay. There always is. All right. Well, to wrap up, I generally ask one question, kind of end on a spiritual note here. But before we do that, I want to make sure you guys have ample opportunity to make sure people know where to find you and follow your stuff. I think you guys do a great show, and it's a fun way to just get brought up to speed with what Mormon stuff is in the news and to hear your dialogue on it. So, Jeff or Al, who wants to jump in? Where can people find you and connect with you?
Al, let's do it like we do on the show.
Well, you can always, you can visit us at thisweekinmormons.com. Come listen to the show. We typically try and have a new intro song or outro song every week that we have written by some poor, unsuspecting person that offers their services for hire. And then we make them write a song about a Mormon news podcast. Thisweekinmormons.com or find us on iTunes and all that stuff. Also, you can email us if you would like to debate us in the private life. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com. We'd love to get that stuff.
Yeah, and likewise, we're on social media, like a lot of people. So our Facebook page is a pretty thriving place for discussion and things like that. So follow us on Facebook. We have a good Twitter account, too. We're on Instagram. We're on Google Plus, if that's your thing. So,
It's not anybody's thing. Google Plus is not anybody's thing.
It's a few people's thing. Android devotees. And that's okay.
Nice.
And you can find us at all those places. If you ever have any trouble finding our show, you know, shoot us an email. Send us a message. We try to be
cool.
Responsive.
All right, Jeff, my last question for you. We'll start with you, and Al, I'm going to ask you the same question so you start thinking. But as you have now, you said about 18 months serving as Elders Quorum president and being in this leadership role, as you look back and reflect on that time, how has your time serving as a leader made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
See, I'm glad I looked at the note you sent us before. I haven't fully fleshed this one out in my mind, because sometimes I like actually ask myself, man, have I become a worse disciple? Like, am I so wrapped up in the busy work of my calling that I'm not taking care of the other stuff? And that's a hard thing to keep track of. I feel like just just swamped half the time. And it has nothing to do with my anything spiritually engaging. But I will say it has, because I think it's given me a greater understanding of the Savior's mission, particularly just in, you know, teaching the poor in spirit and in really understanding and loving everybody. And that's something I've appreciated, those insights, quite a bit, as I've gotten to know people through home teaching, whether or in the PEC and the ward council, understanding the other needs of the ward. That's been a whole other, you've had whole discussions on how to have an effective, you know, ward council and stuff, but that's also tapped me into more stuff that's going on that I wasn't aware of. And likewise, getting to know the brethren in my quorum, has really benefited me a lot. I've come to appreciate a lot of these guys in ways I didn't know them before. And I know this is sort of all transitive in a sense, but it's definitely made me appreciate my Savior a lot more and appreciate the power of the atonement. When you have guys in your quorum who talk openly about like how they once struggled with pornography, or how a guy was once excommunicated and came back, or how a lot of really interesting discussions and guys are open enough to talk about that, how much of an appreciation for the atonement do you develop? And how grateful I am that people found their way back. No matter what they're still working with or what struggles they may have, we're all in different places on our spiritual journey. But that inevitably people are choosing to follow the Savior as best as they can and try to learn and try to be better as they go along. And boy, has that given me a lot of insights into the way our Father in Heaven views us and the way he, I think our Father in Heaven weeps when we do wrong. I've never viewed him as a jealous or an angry God. I viewed him as one, as a parent who just wants his kids to do right and come back to him. And that's why he sent us his son. And if I can do anything as an Elders Quorum president to help other people come unto Christ and just make that little bit better, and I played some role in that, then job well done as far as I'm concerned. I'll rest well at night.
Nice. All right, Al, how about you? As you've served on the High Council and as an Elders Quorum president, how has your service as a leader made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
Before Al answers his question, I just want to say that you've posed many questions to Al, both as a former Elders Quorum president and as on the High Council. You know, I've had other callings too, Kurt. I've been a ward mission leader.
Overruled!
I've been an FHG chair. I have had other experiences too.
That's every all. Time we do this, do an interview like this, I always find a way. I always find a way to offend you. And I think last time I said, "Well, Jeff, you're just an elder, right?"
I said, "Sit down, Jeff."
Anyway, no,
I apologize, Jeff. I apologize, my friend.
If I may, I don't feel like I got enough attention today, Jeff Obachon.
I didn't.
So I would honestly echo a lot of the sentiment that Jeff had. You get those opportunities to see people as the Savior sees them, which I think is fairly foreign to us, because we're lazy a lot of times. And so when you're forced to sort of work through some of the administrative duties and see people as the Lord would see them, it changes your perspective quite a bit. I, you know, part of the thing that comes with being on a high council is sitting in these disciplinary councils which are always a little bit disheartening. But the thing that really surprised me is how much love is present in those. You know, the first one that I sat through was right around the same time that the Kate Kelly stuff was going on, and the way that it was being described in the media, you know, we never have an opportunity to really think about what those look like or feel like. When you sit in a room with 12 guys in stake presidency that is trying their best to find a way to keep or to help that person return to their Savior, what solution or what outcome of that is going to give them the best chance at rediscovering testimony or getting on the path to Jesus Christ. It's a remarkable thing. It's a really remarkable thing to feel that outpouring of love and that genuine concern, because you expect, you know, like in my mind, I'm like, man, if my kid ever looked at pornography, whoa, I'd be mad. And then you get a kid that actually looked at pornography, that's like, man, I you just sit down and you want to cry with it, because you know they distance themselves from God, and that's the last thing that you'd want anybody to have to go through. And it's not that they did wrong. It's that, they've got this, like, they're hurting, and that's more what you see rather than their actions. Pretty remarkable experience to go through. And so that's definitely been one of the more meaningful things that have contributed to my sort of being able to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, I think, because it's changed my worship. It's changed my study and how I see my own relationship with my Savior.
Al, you said something very interesting there, though, seeing people the way Jesus sees them. And that makes me think of Elder Renlund's talk when he was just called in general conference. That was one of his basic points. And I hope that that's something that we can sort of all adopt going forward as Latter-day Saints. Like, I think it would benefit all of us a lot to do such a thing.
Of course, Jeff needs the last word.
I'm not saying the last word. I was really excited because I remember Elder Renlund said that. That was one of those things that jumped out at me during general conference.
It was good. It definitely was.
Concludes the interview with Jeff Obichon, Al Doan. You can see they're just a party bunch and funny guys. They have great chemistry on their podcast. And again, I encourage you to go to thisweekinmormons.com and subscribe and listen to what they're putting out there. So as I always do, as tradition is at this point of the podcast, I just want to say thank you for the many individuals that are contributing, that are emailing me. It's just overwhelming. I actually went out to lunch with somebody just the other day who first found me on Leading LDS, and I would, and if anybody wants to go to lunch, I'm game. So we had a great talk, and he gave me some good ideas on how to improve Leading LDS, what he likes about it. It's just great to get to know people that are actually listening in, because many times I feel very alone in a room with a microphone, but so it's good to meet individuals in person. And I'm actually working on, I just launched it. Those of you familiar with Patreon.com, it's sort of like a Kickstarter, but it's for ongoing projects where, you know, Kickstarter projects usually have a sunset or an end to the project. But Patreon is sort of for artists and creators that have ongoing projects like Leading LDS. And so you can go to patreon.com/leadingLDS and contribute there. And what I want to do is, those of you that listen and find even a little value in Leading LDS, all I ask is that maybe you consider contributing a dollar, just $1. And I bet you can find a dollar somewhere in your couch cushions, in your kid's piggy bank. Okay, don't steal from your kids, but I just ask everybody who finds value in Leading LDS to contribute a dollar. If you can contribute more than a dollar, that'd be great. And it's a monthly thing. So if you contribute a dollar, it'll just have you contribute a dollar each month. And this is really going to pour gasoline on the flames of Leading LDS. And with some of that money, I can produce more effective podcasts. These podcasts cost me about $10 to $15 each time I produce it, with editing and just making it sound professional. And so if you find value there, I'd love to have you contribute. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.